This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Back, folks, back here on another edition of the MGO Blog Roundtable on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com and live on the stream. So YouTube, on the Michigan Insider YouTube account or YouTube page, also on Twitter, the Michigan Insider Twitter account, Facebook Live on WTKA's Facebook account. You can always follow us for those of you who aren't just listening. Listening live over the air or on to the online stream, you can view us. You can see Brian Cook and Seth Fisher, and you can even see Craig Ross, even though he doesn't have a phone. He does not have a Twitter account. He does not know how to use the library. He knows how to use the video stream. So he is with
Don't
us.
Don't tell every- Rich Reddy that, please. I love Rich Reddy. Don't tell him that.
But guys, I mean, we finally to the point where we can start talking about or previewing games, actual games that are going to be played. We're back on next week. Knocking on wood, we'll be talking about games that have been played. I'm curious what you thought of the decision. I think you guys alluded to this possibility last week, at least, was the decision to postpone the matchup with Illinois and all of the grief that it brought from Illinois fans saying that Michigan was ducking them. What did you make of? What do you think of the decision to postpone that one to play on Sunday against Wisconsin?
I asked my brother a bit about this one because I was getting emails saying, hey, what's the big deal? Nobody is testing positive within the Michigan basketball program so far as we know. So why aren't they playing any games? They can test up the yin yang. And, My brother said this, given that we think the variant is more transmissible and could spread through the community, I'm guessing the state health department wanted to expand the quarantine in an abundance of caution. And the last thing the state or Michigan wanted was to be the source of a less than cautious decision that spread this thing all over the place. And really, Michigan really didn't have much choice when the state health department came in and said, you know, we're not telling you guys what to do, right. But we're sort of telling you guys what to do. Right. Because if you don't listen to what we said, then you become the ultimate knuckleheads if this thing spreads. So Michigan sort of got stuck here because of the decision by the state health department. And from what John says, it wasn't. You know, it was, quote, an abundance of caution, but not crazy either. You know, perhaps if we had used an abundance of caution a year ago, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. So in any event, that's his point of view and what he said.
Preaching to the choir, brother. And I'm talking about Brother John, too. Yeah. But, you know, the pause, I think we had all, I mean, we knew when that was slated to end. There was some discussion as to whether or not they should play, there should be more of a ramp-up time to actually playing games. And they decided that there should be in postponing the Illinois game. What of that decision? It's one it sounds like many anticipated being the case. What do you think of the decision to do so, guys?
Well, so a lot of other teams that have gone on COVID pauses haven't stopped practicing. They've still kind of been in a season game flow just without games. Michigan had to stop entirely. And, you know, if you come back and you've been doing things other than playing basketball, you're at a higher risk for muscle injuries. And I just don't think it's worth having that game played at the time it's scheduled if there is a serious chance that one of your guys is going to come up with a pulled hamstring. So that makes a total sense to me. I mean, nobody's ducking Illinois. Didn't they lose to, like, Rutgers or something? Nobody's ducking Illinois.
Illinois is so cute.
Five losses on the season. Get out of here.
They probably pulled up like every tweet by a Buckeye from last December, and they're like, okay, just edit that a little bit and send it back out again, and keep trying, guys. You'll be our big rebel eventually.
They were on it hard too, and I'm like, wait a minute, is this just something that people say about Michigan, you know, whether Terp Street or Illinois folks? Because I'm looking at Baylor. Have you guys looked at the games that are off Baylor's or postponed on Baylor's schedule now? It's like five games against ranked opponents or something like that.
Yeah, Texas Tech, and I think is off their schedule at this point and some others. So, yeah, I mean, it's just what's going on right now. It's not that Michigan doesn't want to play Illinois. We're going to play Illinois eventually this year. It's going to happen, I suspect. And this has nothing to do with it.
I mean, that's the one game that they'll make a priority for Michigan to reschedule.
Yeah, because we haven't played them.
Right, and everybody, the other five games that other four games Michigan have to make up, they either have a game scheduled in the future with Indiana or Michigan State, or they've already played Penn State and Northwestern. So,
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear Penn State and Northwestern say we were ducking them, by the way. And if anyone saw Northwestern last night, oh my goodness.
What has happened to them? You got
They were in a double game.
Wow.
Go ahead, Brian.
I mean, they had kind of the one trick pony with Nance as the five that I think caught people by surprise. But now that you're used to it, you know what's coming. They don't really have the diversity to maintain that. It's like a Rich Rod first half. They do some good stuff and then they're done at halftime.
Well, I mean, and they also have this guy Chase Audige, who unbelievable.
He's
unbelievable, because the truth is he has some ability to play basketball, but what is in his head, I have no idea, because he just does the craziest stuff minute after minute on a basketball court that I've ever seen. I've never seen a guy get so little out of the ability that he has. And he seems like the team is uncoached. Plus, they were up by about six, I think, with a minute to go in the first overtime, I think. And then they decided, oh, we're ahead by six. We don't actually have to shoot the ball the rest of the game. And they didn't. And it went into a second overtime, which they lost. I mean, really, what is going on there? That team is not completely bankrupt of talent, but they are.
Yeah, I think Juwan kind of showed everybody how to beat them, which is just let Robbie Barron alone and, you know, use your forward guard to guard to guard Nance at the when he's shooting out five. And now they're not a five out team anymore, and okay, they're back to being everybody else, and they just can't shoot like anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, meanwhile, the team that's really come along since Michigan has been off has been Ohio State.
So that's where exactly, Craig, you've been doing this for a while. You may not know how to do the library, but you know how to do a radio show, man. Ohio State, it's not just who they're beating, guys.
Yeah,
it's where they're beating them. I know this is not a typical year on the road. You aren't facing road crowds. The road venues aren't as intimidating. But they went to Rutgers and gave them an L. They went to Illinois, gave them an L. They went to Wisconsin, gave them an L. Went to Iowa, gave them an L. And now they're number four in the country, five straight victories. This squad is, I know we talked about them a little bit last week, but what do you make of how successful they've been on the road and suddenly being in the top five nationally?
I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense. You look at that roster, you got nobody over 6'8". You're running out on no shoot for the whole game. Your point guard is iffy and has missed some games. Like, Dwayne Washington is a good to bad shots guy, but he's not, you know, an elite offensive player. Justice Suing is kind of in the same boat where it's like, yeah, he's a good Big Ten player. But I think they have the number four offensive efficiency in the country, which I don't know where that comes from. I mean, you can look at the stats. They don't turn the ball over. They shoot it reasonably well. They get to the line a lot. They're really great at the line. But yeah, you look at this team and they are more than the sum of their parts. Like, if Chris Holtmann ever recruits at a Fed model-like level, that's where they're going to be at again. He's a really good coach. I do think that there's a little something to, you know, Ohio State's been a little bit fortunate. They're not running away with these games. And so you'd expect them to have dropped one of them. You know, it's not their efficiency margin is pretty good, but it's not out of this world. And then they get Iowa without CJ Frederick. You know, Iowa gets Frederick back. They have a 10-point win over Rutgers. That win over Rutgers, they lose Miles Johnson and then their backup center is out of that game. And Rutgers, you know, in those two games, when Miles Johnson is playing, they're better than Ohio State. But they have foul trouble in both games for Johnson, and that's when Ohio State runs away and hides. So I think that there's something there where you can, you know, if you can play some defense, you can get after them at the center if you have a Hunter Dickinson. And I feel like still relatively confident about that game. But yeah, they've come out of nowhere. Chris Holtmann might be coach of the year.
Yeah, I agree with most of that, especially the Holtmann piece. I mean, we said that the last year or two that we had a high regard for his ability to coach. And unlike Northwestern, which seems to be like a bunch of throwdown guys, just what are you doing? This team, this Ohio State team, is really focused and really plays together. And they're not completely bereft of talent. Remember, Kyle Young was a guy that Michigan really, really wanted. Beilein loved Kyle Young. And he's a nice player. He's unselfish. He does a lot of the dirty work in a basketball game. I like him. I always felt the same as Brian about Dwayne Washington, but Dwayne Washington the last month has been a really good basketball player, which has surprised me, but he's come along. And then I think it's impossible to underrate EJ Liddell, who is only 6'7", but the more I look at him, the words that keep coming in my head are Phil Hubbard. Now, you guys never saw Phil Hubbard. He was a 6'7 center who played for Michigan in the 70s on probably my favorite Michigan teams with Ricky Green and Steve Grody and Johnny Robb. And those teams were a lot of fun, and there was a lot of synergy. And I hate to say it, but I think this Ohio State team reminds me a lot of those teams. That they have some limitations, particularly at point guard, but the guy at point guard isn't that bad either. I mean, he's coming along, and they're a real team. They've won 8 of their last 9. I mean, they just killed Ohio State at home. I mean, Michigan State. And Michigan State has problems.
Terrible.
But I wouldn't say they're terrible.
They just killed Nebraska. I mean.
Yeah. They killed Nebraska. Nebraska was, 2 of 23 from 3 or something. I don't know. They won by 10. But I really do think the Big Ten has evolved to Michigan, Illinois, and Ohio State. Obviously, it's all on Michigan's back. If they win games, they're going to win the regular season Big Ten. But Illinois, we said from the beginning of the year, I felt was the most talented team in the conference and still probably kind of feel that way. But Ohio State's obviously Michigan's really good, but Ohio State's really good too. And Iowa, the problem that they've got is they just don't play defense. That's always going to be they either got to make a lot of threes or they lose. So
the thing about Ohio State, they kind of remind me of a Don Brown Boston College defense, where just like they're an island of misfit toys. Like, you know, EJ Liddell, like, where do you put that guy normally? A power forward? He can't shoot a three. But like his role, where he like plays center a little bit and he like, you know, bangs inside and causes foul trouble for all your centers. Like, we didn't even mention that Luca Garza and Kofi Coburn had like early fouls in those games too, and Garza gets auto benched, and it's like, well, you take that guy off of Iowa and you're got a whole different team, right?
Oh yeah, that's true.
So
yeah, he missed 12 minutes in the first half of that game.
Yeah, and they went on a run at the end of the first half. That's why Fran McCaffrey was on 10 when questioned about it. It's like, hey, you want me to play my backups? The guy had 2 fouls. I play my backup. Like, come give me a break. So yeah, man, that's the thing that's perplexing. That was perplexing to me, and I think you really put it in perspective, Brian, because you mentioned Miles Johnson, you mentioned Kofi Coburn, you mentioned Luka Garza. These are all matchups that should devastate Ohio State, and for different reasons, they haven't.
Yeah, and then the Illinois, when they shoot 53% from 3, and Liddell's 4-7, so that's like there's some. I'm not trying to denigrate what Ohio State has been able to do this season. They're 16-4 in the best conference in the country. But I do feel like there's a gap between Ohio State's performance so far and Michigan's and Illinois', even though they lost this game. Illinois has outperformed them, I believe. And it's getting close in terms of efficiency. But still feel relatively confident about that matchup.
You know, speaking of Illinois, I've got a question for Sam. I've watched them quite a bit, and DeSomu, who's phenomenal, cannot go to his left. He only goes right, and they run. And what they've done, is they run this play where he starts on the right. He runs through a bunch of screens on a big wide circle, gains momentum coming back to the right from the left hand side of the court, and yet nobody seems to be paying any attention to that. has Tim McCormick talked about this at all? Perhaps that this guy just does not go left ever, and that teams get, if they cut him off to the right, all of a sudden he's not nearly at the same level of ability. I mean, has that been talked about? Yeah,
we haven't. You see this with some guys. I mean, DeSumo, I think, is so good still.
Despite the
over reliance on his right hand, because he has a great first step. He has gotten to the point. I mean, we saw him in a game winning situation. His jumper has become more formidable. I'm not saying that he is a great jump shooter, but he's made it so it is not, if he doesn't get right, he can't do anything. But what you're talking about, Craig, is he's facing guys at the college level. You know, maybe if you got a Charles Matthews, maybe if you got an exceptional athlete that you could put on him, even with the knowledge of his ability, his over-reliance to the right hand, the ability of most guys at the college level to defend that still is going to be limited. You know, unless you have a really good athlete on him, or a really good defensive plan where they help to his right hand, or they overplay his right hand well enough, he's still going to get his. It's the limiting factor for him as a pro prospect. Make no mistake. I think if Ayu Dosunmu had a left hand, he'd be in the pros right now. He would have jumped to the NBA already. And I think, you know, that he, I can't say that I've watched a ton of Illinois this year.
I have to
really notice that, you know, there's no improvement in that regard. But if it's as you say it is, his draft stock won't be any better. That was that and shooting. And I give him credit, his shooting. I haven't checked his stats here this morning, but I know when we talked about him recently, his shooting was better. His 3-point shooting percentage was up. Yeah, so he's at least gotten that part better. If his left hand isn't there, his stock will be depressed. That was one of the knocks on him.
Yeah, he's actually hitting 41% from three, but he's only taken 56 this year. So he's very much, you know, an inside the arc kind of guy. And, you know, I was reading Sam Vecenie's mock draft, because I'm just checking every NBA mock draft to make sure Dickinson doesn't show up. And they mentioned that, you know, some NBA guys are kind of coming around on a shooting, but others are still skeptical because simply the volume isn't there.
Yeah, I'm not skeptical of his ability to hit the jump shot, although I don't know if he's got, you know, it may take him some while to adjust to the NBA three. And I'm not really concerned about his NBA prospects. I mean, I think he'll be an NBA player. But what I just hope when Michigan plays him that they'll try and
force him left.
And force him left. And I'm watching teams that don't seem to be trying to force him left. And when they are, they run this sort of circle double pick where he's getting a momentum to from left to right, and they're still not seeming to pay any attention. So I just find it odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in games where there's a player on him that can keep him, because some guys are just so exceptional, and I put him in this group, that if you put an average athlete on him, he's still going to be able to get to his dominant hand. Now, in situations where they can't, clearly they've made some adjustments to still get him going to his right. That's where a team like Michigan that has a Shaundi Brown, right, that you can stick on him, that has great defensive, they might be able to blow him up. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, to your point, maybe we should be a little more optimistic about Michigan in that matchup. But most teams can't throw that at him. And he's still going to be able to get his at the college level. In the pros, he won't be able to. Better get a left hand. Better get a left hand. This is going to be a long day, and his draft stock won't be much better. Because I don't know where you said you don't question his jump shooting. Everyone was questioning his jump shooting, Craig. That's one of the reasons why he's back. And so that part is somewhat better. I guess still a question mark based on the stat that Brian gave about him not shooting very many, but that left hand is a problem. And if he can't show that, you're going to see him going in the lower part of the first round as opposed to the upper part.
Meanwhile, he and Garza are considered, one of the two, the player of the year in the Big Ten. But I've been watching Garza. Garza looks like he's poured concrete into his feet. He's getting slower and slower. I mean, it's impossible.
Only on defense.
Yeah, I mean,
only on defense.
Offense,
he's still incredible on offense.
He's good on offense, but he looks heavier and slower. I mean, I don't know what the deal is with Garza. I don't see Garza in the NBA at all.
No, he's not. That's not going to happen. But, they put up a stat in the most recent Iowa game, just the impact of Frederick being on the floor versus not being on the floor. And one of the weird effects of not having Frederick is that Luka Garza's shooting just went off a cliff from two. And I think that's because Iowa has four shooters they can surround Garza with their starting lineup. But once you start getting into the bench, Joe Toussaint isn't going to shoot. Aaron Ulis isn't going to shoot. Keegan Murray isn't really going to shoot from the outside very much. So you can collapse on Garza when they don't have that kind of firepower around him. And so I think that's part of his recent relative struggles. He's still, of course, the number one guy for KenPom Player of the Year. But, he had some off games, but he's still just relentless, just has huge usage, just the guy you have to deal with first and foremost in any Iowa game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's slower than Granville Waiters at this point, who I thought was the slowest human who ever played in the Big Ten, but I don't know.
He doesn't look any slower or worse on defense to me. They've always worked on defense. This is not a revelation, and every time I hear a pundit, I mentioned last week, Jay Billis is like, they gave up 50% shooting to Illinois. Like, that's new. Like, when don't they give up 50% shooting to an opponent? I mean, they're never going to win anything of note with Fran McCaffrey there saying we only have to play offense. It's like I called the we were talking a brief aside. We aren't getting in talking NBA, Brian, so don't crap a brick here for a second.
You can talk NBA. I don't mind that.
But the New Jersey Nets are the same way. They only play offense. Since James Harden got there, they're the best offense in the NBA, but they're the worst defense in the NBA, and that's how you lose to a Detroit Pistons.
Who's the coach there, Sam?
It's Steve Nash.
Steve Nash, okay. And who is his coach?
Right, Dan Tony, exactly. Yeah. They'll play defense. That's why they won't win. It's why Iowa won't win as well. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side with more MGo Blog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
Hey, people want to know what we talk about off air. It's, what was that? Orthogony?
Orthography.
Orthography. Something that I've never heard of until 30 minutes ago.
One to talk about something you've never heard of coming up on the...
Extremely fascinating where our letters come from. It's incredibly fascinating. Also, I had to learn Hebrew as a kid, so being able to connect the Hebrew to the English letters to me, I thought was interesting.
Oh, that sounds painful to me. I couldn't have. But the Spanish, the Spanish tapes, I really enjoyed, even if I've got to go back even to figure out adios every 5 minutes. But it still makes me feel. Americans just don't learn languages.
Seth has all the insight on Jaden Mangum, by the way.
That's right. I only posted the defensive side of the of my latest recruiting update, so I didn't get to have my big Grove celebration. That there's more Jaden Mangum talk going around. We've never had a scholarship player on Michigan football. From Grove.
He might
oh,
be
that right.
At might your have high higher upside on defense, by the way. I think it would be beneficial to Michigan because they are in good shape with a lot of. I mean, if they take three receivers, two of them will be big guys, and they are in really good shape with Tayshaun Trent. They're in really good shape with Darius Clemens, and Jaden Mangum really likes him as well. And his brother didn't go to Michigan State, which was what
he may now though he's in the portal.
Yeah, I thought he was going to USF.
1 minute back.
I didn't see where he went. I just knew.
I think Sam's right. I think he's going to USF.
All right.
That's what I saw.
Aaron Mangum, his brother, transferred to Colorado. And Mel Tucker recruited him to Colorado. And then you're thinking, okay, this guy's going to come home and go to Michigan State. He said, nah.
Nope. Yeah, not going to Mel.
Hey, you remember what Mel said? If you can't recruit to Michigan State, you can't recruit. That was Mel Tucker's words, not mine. Like, dude, you can't recruit a guy you recruited already?
Back in 39.
Like, how does that work? Man.
I've been to Boulder, Colorado, and I've been to East Lansing, and I can tell you which one I'd rather be recruiting to.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, but he's going to – I mean, I know Tampa just won the Super Bowl, but, I mean, man, he chose USF over Michigan. Well,
I assume everybody wins in that area now.
I assume Michigan State was on his radar, but –
Stand by, guys. Coming back on radio.
And we are back here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. I want to get to a football topic that is right up Seth Fisher's alley. But before we do, just a brief sort of forecast, Brian. Michigan hockey coming off the pause. I know we talked about Michigan basketball coming off the pause. You know, what's your forecast for Michigan hockey coming off the pause?
Well, I mean, they've been playing great. They lost that one game to Michigan State, but they've dominated weekends against good teams, and I think they're set to take off as long as, you know, the pause doesn't get to them. And that's a strong possibility. You know, we've been talking about how I feel pretty optimistic about some of these upcoming matchups against Big Ten basketball teams, but there's a definite scenario where Michigan just comes out and doesn't play like themselves, and that's a possibility for the hockey team as well.
Hockey's rough, man, because like you develop your line mates and like that rapport with the guys on the ice with you to like an incredibly high degree before you can actually get out there and play. So I'm kind of more worried about hockey than basketball.
Well, it's obviously a big weekend because Wisconsin just demolished Minnesota last weekend, I believe. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the games was 8-1, and the other one was not.
It was 4-1, and it was almost more dominant than the 8-1 game.
Yeah, and so Wisconsin is really loaded with talent.
Beat them earlier in the year, though.
Pardon me?
Yeah, Michigan did beat them earlier.
Yeah, we beat them there.
They were without, like, a star. I think I forget what his name is.
They had a guy who was at the Canada World Junior Camp. Yeah. Who's going to be a first rounder. So that's going to definitely be a boost for them. On the other hand, Michigan swept Notre Dame right before the pause, and they were also coming off a sweep of Minnesota. So I think, you know, right. I have all kinds of respect for Wisconsin's talent level, but I think Corey Prodman of The Athletic just put out his latest mock draft, has current Wolverines at 2, 3, and 5, and incoming defenseman Luke Hughes is number 1 overall. So, yes, if that happens...
Yeah, well, Michigan is loaded. There's no question about that. I mean, they're very young. I think they're the youngest team in college hockey right now. Maybe Minnesota's close.
Yeah, there's like one or two that are actually a little bit younger.
But in terms of talent, there's no question there. Hopefully they'll do it this weekend. Because really, if Michigan continues on their roll, they still can win the conference at this point. They're behind Wisconsin by a few points, but they've got two games in hand, and they still have Minnesota to play yet also. So,
right. All right. So I mentioned wanting to get into a football topic that is up Seth Fisher's alley. Now, I want to qualify the discussion a bit, saying we're projecting somewhat when it comes to what Michigan will be defensively, really grabbing from what the Ravens do mostly. But if you... if you have sort of done some feeling around on the topic, you know that definitely they're bringing a lot of Ravens principles to the table with them. They're going to borrow from Todd Grantham. Not quite sure, what influence Mo Linguist is going to have yet, but it's going to be a hodgepodge of sorts. But assuming, but for the purposes of this argument, that they bring with them the Ravens scheme, here's the question. On Michigan's current roster, What player would you pick out? Who benefits the most from the change to this defense? And I know you've looked at it pretty hard, Seth, so we'll start with you and what you see in the Ravens defense and then sort of applying it to Michigan's current roster, the guys currently here, who maybe will benefit most from the switch?
I mean, if they have a nose tackle, Chris Hinton is going to blow up in this defense. If he doesn't have to play nose, now he could play nose and he could be great at that too. But if he gets to play off tackle in this defense, that position, you know, we remember when we were a 4-3 under when Greg Madison came here, and then that that off tackle position just had just a stream of great players come through it. It's time for Chris Hinton to blow up anyway, but I think he's got to be pretty excited about the opportunity to kind of go one-on-one on guards.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned if he plays nose tackle, and I just don't know. They don't have a lot of options,
mm-hmm.
guys. I mean, he might have to. And when I say have to, it makes it sound like he can't, because I think you make a great point, Seth. He could be really good there if he adds weight. And so the talk has been that they're going to let him get back to his, quote, natural weight, that he's likely to play at 315 plus this year, and that'd be fine and play the nose. But if a guy like Mozzie Smith can step up, mm-hmm. for instance, Mozzie, who didn't get her any run in the past, he's certainly big enough. I think it'll come down to his stamina and, you know, from down to down how much he can play. But can you really count on a guy who hasn't played significantly? Would you park him in the middle right now, or do you go with a guy who's played there, who's played already a significant number of snaps? That's why I'm leaning towards Chris Hinton and hoping for Mozzie Smith to rise up into that role.
And don't forget, like, one of the nice things about this year that everyone kind of glossed over because the year was so bad was that Donovan Jeter was not bad at defensive tackle last year. And so, like, that guy should be figured
back.
In your – and he's back. And he should be figuring in your thoughts on a tackle this year, because, I mean, he can hold up, and that's the first thing.
So are you guys thinking this will be a 3-4?
I think that there will be a base.
Or is it
be multiple. I mean, they aren't going to come out and that just be what they are all the time. No, but will it be there? I think it'll be their base, yeah. What you're saying, Brian?
Well, so you need two nose tackles, right? I mean, there's no way around that. So, you know, talking about either or, I think both are going to have to play there, and we'll see about Jeter. The you know, the guy who kind of jumps out to me is Julius Welshoff, because if you have a real nose tackle who can absorb double teams, you know, Welshoff is an athlete who is showed flashes, especially in pass rush last year, but didn't have the technique to hold up doubles very well. So if you have a guy who is demanding those and he gets more single blocking, that's a place where I think he could make a big step forward.
You know, I'm going to go off the grid and a couple of guys that we haven't heard very much from at all, but just their body types and athleticism. If we're looking at the Ravens and how successful Matt Judon was, and I'm a huge Matt Judon fan, was coming out of high school, Michigan just couldn't. I mean, hell, Eastern couldn't get him in, which is how he wound up at Grand Valley. But I'm looking at two guys. I'm looking at David Ajabo, and I'm looking at the kid from Jalen Harrell. You know, two guys that have that body type, you know, that can be that sort of linebacker that can come off the edge, give you some pressure, be really effective in the run game. That hybrid guy, that outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense. I think those are two guys that jump out to me, because they're the only two like them on this roster. And you got to believe that McDonald came in and said, man, yeah, this is what I'm looking for. Now, they haven't played. They haven't proven anything, but just how they look, got to believe that those are two guys they're going to try to get something from this year.
Yeah, for me, and it has nothing to do with scheme. It's just what I saw was high school tape. The kid from Erasmus, is that Mohan?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just, when I looked at his high school tape, thought he was so incredibly instinctive. And it seemed to me in a 3-4, there might be more of a place for him. And he really is good at dodging guys at the line, dodging offensive linemen at the line of scrimmage and finding the ball. At least in high school he was. And so I'm still optimistic, I am optimistic about him. And in a 3-4, there may be some place for easier place to piece him in. But
I think it's a great pick. I just don't know what he is.
Yeah, that's my question, right? I don't know what he is.
He's not what they're going to call it, but he's a Viper, right? And that's every defense has one now.
Yeah.
Every defense.
So, Sam, as a Ravens fan, I just want to jump in and remind the listeners that there's an obvious answer that we haven't actually said yet, because Ravens defenses always try to highlight the free running center field guy out there in space playing safety, Dax Hill's going to thrive in this defense. He's going to be terrific playing what Earl Thomas was supposed to be, but Earl Thomas is a knucklehead.
Work it all out. Get it out.
I feel better.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to have a conversation again about, you know, are you safety? I think they're at least going to have the discussion.
I don't know what's going to go on in the secondary because I don't know who can play secondary, right?
Like, they recruited so many safeties is the point. Like, sure, they got a lot of safeties.
Sure. I mean, like, as far as, like, what they play and what their system's going to be and everything, like, that's just got to be what you have on the roster. Like, I know Mo Linguist has done a lot of pattern matching stuff, but, mm-hmm. you know, that teaching that in 1 year, like, unless that's the only thing you're going to do and you're doing it right now, and you still have to be able to play a lot of man to do that, right? Pattern matching is man, okay, maybe cover three. Mm-hmm. So, like...
Well, Pattern matching is man coverage, but hopefully you have an advantage because you're coming from a particular zone and you're matching onto the route. So hopefully you have a positional advantage when you make your decision.
It's basketball.
It's always going to happen.
It's the best way to describe it.
I just don't know that you delay that process because you better start it now because it's going to be Greek to these guys. I mean, they are a spot drop team and with very limited zone variation.
Yeah,
you start dumping it on them now, you know, make them learn a new language now and learn through the growing pains as much as you can in the moment. And hopefully by the time you get to the season, you've drilled it enough where guys aren't swimming out there. But I don't think you delay what your base is going to be and what you were hired to do. I think that's another thing. I think this was one of the things that Harbaugh in his search was really looking for. And so are you going to, you know, kind of try to dumb it down because they haven't done anything like it? No, I think they jump right in and hope for the best. I think you're going to see them be active in the portal. I know it hasn't manifest yet, but as I've been telling people over on the site, look at the portal as a process. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to know that they're looking around. And just like we knew Lance Dixon was going to go into the portal well before he went into the portal, you got to know there are going to be some more guys going into the portal and, you know, during and after spring ball that could possibly help you. So
it would be really, really nice if like some guy in Alabama who realizes he's not going to play now because he's played in that system and, like, you know, maybe he's an upperclassman. But, man, the problem with getting anybody in the problem with the portal saving Michigan, and I know that we're already running into this, it is really hard to transfer to Michigan as an undergrad. I had huge problems. I went and studied in France for a bit, and I tried to get those credits to transfer back. And Michigan has this whole system where you have to like match every class to a class that Michigan has. It's awful. It's been awful for decades. People have been hammering about this for decades, and they still haven't fixed it. And it affects the football team too.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. It's a clear hurdle, to say the least. But to the original point, I think Ira is, I think he nails it. If Dax Hill is, you know, safety this year, which probably going to be, but if I think it'd be foolish to not at least ask the question to see if he'd be willing to help you lock down corner with how well you recruited safety. Because think about all the guys. I mean, we know Brad Hawkins will be back, but think about all the guys that we haven't seen yet. Safety mm-hmm. Makari Page played some last year, but Quentin Johnson is still there. You got the kid Morant is going to be healthy and ready to play this year. The other kid Moten,
yeah,
Moten. I mean, you got him in that mix. I mean, you got all these safeties. You're gonna have to, and then some of those Vipers are safeties too. And so you got to figure out what you're gonna do with some of these guys. I mean, some of them are gonna be linebacker. I could see Mohan maybe doesn't go back. Maybe he stays at the linebacker position. Maybe Moten is a linebacker long term. But the point being, you got so many options at safety and not very many at corner.
Yeah.
So, well, that's why I would at least ask the question.
Yeah, and you need the corners to be really good in order to play the way the Ravens play. And that's why I've been like hesitant to be like, hey, we're going to go and do exactly what they've been doing. Because they play a lot of cover zero, which is just no help. You're just out there. And if you got Will Johnson out there, then go ahead. But, you know, as soon as you're going to have that guy in 2022, and maybe Dax Hill can do a little bit of that. But, like, Dax is also you know, that Earl Thomas stuff, like, they move their guys around so much. And they have lots of different guys play lots of different roles. And that's part of, like, the key of that defense is you never know who's going to be in what role any given down. And it makes it really hard to pass on them because you can't really read anything before the snap. And I think Michigan's going to use part of those things, but it'll be a college version. It'll be a dumbed-down version. Mm-hmm. But in that version, Dax Hill, or the safety playing Dax Hill's position, that's why they went and got Earl Thomas, because he can do a lot of those things. He gets to blitz all the time. He gets to play cornerback sometimes. He gets to play free safety, strong safety. He gets to be over tight ends. Like, he'll do a lot of different things because that guy gets moved around basically to replace whoever's blitzing.
Yeah, fascinating question. Who did you pick, Ryan? Who did you say?
Welshoff, because I thought single blocking, more experience, I thought that was a decent shout as a 3 or 5 tech.
Yeah, so we got a Welshoff, we got an Apache Mohan, and then Seth, you went with right there in the middle, mm-hmm. with Chris Hinton. And I sort of, you know, backed out a hedge to my own question and picked two guys in Harrell and David Ajabo. Two guys who, again, haven't done anything yet, but gotta believe McDonald came in and said, man, can we find some more guys that look like that? You know, please, can we go get some more pieces that look like this for my defense? We'll see how it works out. So, guys, just a little bit of recruiting. I mean, again, we had this discussion. We talked about how we would see immediately them look better on the recruiting trail. Last week when we came on, I was talking about the three defensive tackles in a week. And so we saw, you know, Sean Nua show some effective closing there. But then, like, the next day, and this was really, really, guys, I had talked to Cody Jones's dad the week before, and he was like, you know, my son, he really likes Michigan. Things are open now with the firings at Tennessee. And we got to check Michigan out. But he didn't say that they were on the verge of making a decision. And then Thursday, I get a text from him saying it's going down tomorrow. You know, both he and Taylor Groves in the fold, and we're seeing it. Whether it's Mo Linguist in that case, I mean, across the board, just really feeling these guys on the recruiting trail more. I'm curious you guys' impressions thus far.
Yeah, the rapidity with which that happened. So they offered, I think, both of those guys on January 27th, and barely over a week later, they were committed. And that's, you know, you see the quotes the guys talking about Linguist, and that's obviously something that I don't think the last staff had a lot of that ability, right? Like, not many people do. And we'll see what happens with Nolan. I'm skeptical. Just
hey, look, it's just they're in it.
They're in it.
This, I mentioned before, that was an example. This is an example of the kind of recruitment that on the defensive side of the ball, they would have pulled out of. They wouldn't have stayed with, because he's not a very responsive kid. You know, he's not, and that's with every school, not just with Michigan. Not a very responsive kid as far as recruiting is concerned. He's a Southern kid. So it's not like, I mean, you aren't pulling a kid, trying to pull a kid from the Northeast or even the West. You're trying to pull him out of SEC country.
Yeah.
So
yes, Tennessee is still technically SEC country.
Right. And so, you know, for them on defense, this would be the kind of one where, yeah, you drop an offer. But if he's not like, oh, my God, I love Michigan, it's time to bounce. We're getting out of this recruitment. They didn't do that here. And this is a very, very clear example to me of the difference in approach.
Well, yeah, it just seems like it's so smart to be in Tennessee anyway, right? Because you're not going to really competing in the main with University of Tennessee in the short run, I don't think. And so why not be in Tennessee where the home school doesn't really have an advantage at the moment?
Yeah, and so the thing that this reminds me of is a little bit when Josh Gattis comes in, and then all of a sudden Michigan's wide receiver recruiting seems significantly different. Like, they're grabbing Giles Jackson out of the West away from Oregon. They grab Xavier Worthy away from frickin' Alabama. Like, he has really recruited over and above what Michigan should be recruiting at wide receiver right now, just given, you know, what's going on. So linguist has some initial returns that seem to point in the right direction. And if you know, you're going to see Bellamy start doing this too, right? It's not just one guy. It's there's multiple guys who I think are going to start bringing in returns soon. So it's we'll see what the season is like, but I think the reboot of the staff, initial things going on seem pretty good.
Yeah.
Incidentally, what are these guys? Groves and Jones, are they safeties? Are they wide receivers? Are they
Jones
corners?
Jones is 100% a corner. I don't know why they have an aft tag on him still. Probably okay. He plays
offense as well. They're talking about receiver or one of those utility players, P-Harv types that you see in some spread offense. But he's electric with the ball in his hands too, but they recruited him as a corner.
They recruited Groves as a safety. To me, he looks like a wide receiver.
But
you should take this into account is that I'm just a blogger. All of like Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson were also recruiting him as a safety. So
there's a
consensus.
I mean, we've talked about it. Talent evaluation isn't all that easy. I mean, I have these names on a list. Giovanni Carmazzi. Do you know who that is?
No.
How about Spurgeon Wynn?
I remember Spurgeon Wynn. He got drafted before Tom Brady.
So did Giovanni Carmazzi. So did Chris Redmond, T. Martin, Mark Bolger, and Chad Pennington. So, and that's the NFL. And those are quarterbacks who went before Tom Brady. So talent evaluation, obviously, is so don't just say, hey, I'm just a blogger, right?
Not an exact science for sure.
I should get a dollar from the universe for figuring that out.
I'll give you a dollar.
Hey, okay. Do you guys have any update? I suppose I should have an update on this as well, but I haven't checked. People have been asking, hey, is Al Washington, is he leaving Ohio State? Have you guys seen anything on that Tennessee? We've been talking about Tennessee, looking at him as the DC, and Ohio State's been trying to keep him in the fold there. Him leaving Ohio State be a good thing for Michigan.
I think I saw that he has decided to stay.
He has decided to stay. Damn it, Al.
I stay away
from
Ohio State.
Who's going to go to Tennessee right now? You're just asking for it.
It's a chance to DC though.
Yeah, and it might be a good opportunity for him actually, because when you go to a program that's essentially sinking, expectations are low. And so there's some upside to that. And, Tennessee should offer him the head coaching job. Then he would go.
They already offered someone that. It's Josh Heupel, who is at UCF, because their athletic director came from UCF. And so he just brought the coach with him.
Yeah, and they said, the crazy thing about it, I mean, they went for a bunch of different guys, and they said they were getting turned down.
Well, they had 30 guys leave the team over the past year, and they're about to get hit with recruiting sanctions because they were giving people money in, like, McDonald's bags.
literal McDonald's bags.
Right. I mean, I would be cautious about taking that job, especially given everything surrounding that program. Like, there is an Athletic article about, like, the 30 craziest things that have happened to Tennessee in the past 15 years, and it's pretty crazy. Like,
a wild list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fellas, it is always an absolute blast. And next week when we come back on, we will have games that we can talk about. It's just feels like forever. Looking forward to that. But did a great job in the absence of games. So appreciate you guys, as do all of our viewers on Facebook Live, YouTube, and Twitter. Back next week with the MGO Blog Roundtable. And of course, tomorrow it'll be Ira and Miz here holding it down on the Michigan Insider, as I got some work to do on the home front.
understand. Wait a minute. I understand how
2 minutes, guys.
The library works.
Did they have libraries back when Craig was coming up? Come on.
No, they had, but I mean, you went in, you gave them a card, you got the book, and then you got a fine because you didn't take it back in time. I understand all that. But what about Audible books? I mean, how does that work? Because they're not going to give
app. You put the app on your device, which I'm sure you don't have one.
What device?
Right.
I don't have a device.
I discovered the first problem.
Craig, can I give you an old cell phone? Like, I have, like, you know, I have an old cell phone that will work for, you know, the four things you need it to
do. You don't have to put a SIM card in it so that nobody can call you on it, but it'll still connect to the internet.
To the internet. That's all you need.
Oh, really?